listening to The Martial Brain, the podcast that explores the intersection between the martial arts, science, critical thinking, skepticism, and that wacky organ that floats inside our skulls in a pool of cerebral spinal fluid, making life unpredictably inspiring, infuriating, and sometimes just batshit crazy. I'm Jeff Westfall for The Martial Brain. Come at me, bro. The pre-fight ritual and the martial arts. Few aspects of human behavior are more entertaining than the antics performed by two humans, nearly always male humans, who are ostensibly getting ready to fight with each other. Examples of this peculiar behavior vary from the subtle to the ridiculous. The pre-fight ritual, though, is not just a human phenomenon. It goes way back through our genetic history, to well before we evolved into modern humans. And many more fantastic examples abound on the other branches of the giant family bush of the animal kingdom. This kind of behavior among animals has a name in biology and behavioral science. It's called dymatic behavior, or threat display behavior. It's intended to either distract or intimidate a predator or an opponent, and despite how ridiculous it may often appear to you and me, it actually serves a really important purpose. Just think about it. Before we evolved into modern humans, we lived out in the natural world, where whether you were a carnivore, insectivore, herbivore, or omnivore, your very survival depended on your physical ability to move around in your environment in order to secure food and avoid predators. In conditions like that, injuries that to modern humans are mostly an inconvenience because they lay us up for a few weeks could easily lead to starvation, or worse, being killed and eaten. Assuming such conditions, it stands to reason that developing strategies to avoid unnecessary fights would be a really useful thing to do. One way to succeed in avoiding fights is to perform a display that convinces the potential opponent that you are not to be lightly messed with. This frequently involves reflexes or postures that make you look bigger. For bears and apes, this means standing up on your hind legs to your full height while extending your forelimbs overhead. For chimpanzees, it also means that the hair all over your body stands straight up, apparently inflating your volume. Being closely related to chimps, humans actually have the same reflex. But in our case, it's been reduced to the phenomenon called goosebumps. Each goosebump is actually tiny muscles contracting to make a single hair follicle stand up. It's simply the case that for many modern humans, the vestigial hair is too fine to see. So all that appears when this reflex is triggered are the bumps. Other examples of trying to look bigger include the frilled lizard opening the frill around its neck like an umbrella, or an elephant spreading its ears wide, or a crab doing the same with its claws, or a bird with its wings, or a human with his arms, a very common human pre-fight gesture. Other threat responses involve blatantly displaying your weapons. That's what the act of snarling accomplishes. It pulls the lips up to display the teeth. Baboons do the same thing, but a little differently. When confronted with danger, they yawn, but not because they're sleepy. Instead, they do it in order to open their mouth really wide, fully exposing the impressively large canine teeth that baboons possess. When a baboon yawns in your direction, he's not doing it because he's sleepy or bored. Certain species of lizard also open their mouths extremely wide when threatened, a behavior called gaping. But instead of doing it to display their teeth, which are functional but not visually impressive, they're attempting to draw attention to their jaw muscles. The males of these lizard species have evolved very large jaw muscles, enabling them to sometimes even break the bones of other lizards with a bite. To further draw the attention of a potential opponent to their prodigious mandibular flexors, they've also evolved brightly colored patches of skin at the corners of their mouth that deploy to full size when they gape. Here's a cool, nerdy fact. Unlike humans, these lizards can see into the ultraviolet part of the spectrum, and the color of these skin patches glow in the ultraviolet to quite literally reflect this fact. There are also usually auditory components to an animal's threat display, the most common being a throaty growl, but also including hissing, roaring, screaming, in the case of gorillas, roaring and pounding their chest, and in the case of humans, hissing, roaring, screaming, bragging, insulting, and yes, maybe even pounding their chests. These are just a few of the ways that animals express the flagrant warning, "It would be a mistake of monumental proportions to fuck with me." In most pre-industrial human cultures, it was quite common to see group versions of threat display. For example, before two armies would come to battle with each other, frequently a champion from each side would come out to fight each other. This practice was as practical as are the more instinctive forms of dymatic behavior. It was not an infrequent occurrence for the army whose champion was defeated to take this as a bad omen, and as a result, turn around and leave the battlefield before more killing occurred. That's one hell of a lot of killing avoided at the cost of one death. Another cultural form of dymatic behavior is the war dance. I'm sure that just about every culture, at one point in their history or another, had some form of this. Each of them culturally evolved to be as intimidating as dymatic behaviors that were genetically involved. And one of the most famous that springs to mind is that practiced by the Polynesian Aboriginal inhabitants of New Zealand called the Maoris. Their war dance, called the haka, is now so famous that it's become a global cultural meme, nowadays practiced in order to rightly preserve it and celebrate Maori culture. Other cultural threat displays include wearing war paint and sporting other ostensibly frightening accoutrements, like body parts from frightening animals, including fangs, claws, jaws, or even entire skulls. There are even examples in the martial arts of such behavior. In martial arts cinema, there's the character O'Hara in Enter the Dragon, who, before a match against Bruce Lee's character, holds up a wooden board and executes a speed break, this done to intimidate before the bout. And of course, who can forget Mr. Lee's immortal response to this act? In his inimitable voice, he says, "Boards don't hit back." In the real world, martial artists will emit a loud ki-ai, or spirit shout, or strike a dramatic stance, or even execute a kind of war dance, like the Ram Mui of Muay Thai. Or in boxing, kickboxing, or MMA, will engage in the stare down. One classic example of this was done before every one of the ring fights of a kickboxer from the 80s named Jerry the Golden Boy Trimble. Mr. Trimble would stand with his face mere inches from that of his opponent, staring intently at him while the referee gave the pre-fight instructions. During this process, his entire body would be moving in a hip and shoulder wiggling dance that bordered on the suggestive. But while his body appeared to be having a party, his face would remain jammed up close to that of his opponent, unmoving. Such a display could not be more blatant in its intent. It shouted, "I am so utterly unafraid of you that I'm enjoying a little dance right now, despite the fact that your face is a mere 1 inch from mine." But, as I stated at the beginning, the most interesting and entertaining examples of this type of behavior occur before many real self-defense fights between humans, most often male humans. Their behavior includes stalking side to side like a caged tiger, spreading their arms wide, as I described before, insulting their opponent, either in a theatrically calm whisper or in shouts of rage, even planting their face against the face of their opponent, and perhaps even giving them a big wet kiss in order to bore deeply inside their head. There's a cultural effect here, too. There's usually a decided difference in the pre-fight ritual behavior of rich frat boys and that displayed by young men in the inner city. And I'm sure if you went around the world conducting a cultural anthropological study of pre-fight behaviors, you would find that they vary from region to region. But yet they all serve the same purpose. Your self-defense training should take into account this type of behavior and the opportunities and risks that it presents. Assuming that you find yourself in a situation facing another human who seems intent upon fighting with you, but has not yet initiated actual physical contact, what are your options? Well, of course, it goes without saying that you should avoid violence whenever possible, so we're going to stipulate that for some reason you're unable to get out of this situation peacefully, which, by the way, is nearly always a highly unlikely set of circumstances. We very often find ourselves in fights not because we must be there, but because our egos dragged us there. But that will have to remain a topic for another day. So, in the unlikely scenario that you find yourself not fighting, but apparently moments away from an impending fight, and you are unable to get out of it, again, what are your options? First of all, during this pre-fight interval, how close is your potential opponent to you? This factor alone will have a strong influence on what you choose to do next. What is the environment like? Raising your hands into a guard might provoke a fight that you can get out of. I personally find many of the entry techniques from the Filipino art of panantukan ideally suited to many such situations. Techniques with names like the horizontal gunting, the vertical gunting, the backhand gunting, and higot oksiko can all be done from a stance and posture that is non-threatening. Rather than taking up a provocative and obvious guard, you can stand with your arms crossed while still having techniques at the ready. You could also stand with your arms spread apart, but not in the aggressive gesture I described earlier, but in a questioning one, asking, "What's going on here?" You could even stand with your hands hanging at your sides. From every one of these positions, the entries of panantukan provide an array of excellent options should the opponent suddenly attack you. Such techniques take the bizarre and sometimes awkward pre-fight interval and turn it into a moment of opportunity for you to calmly prepare for whatever may come. I want to take a moment here to thank Sifu Dwight D. Woods for inviting me to join him last Friday for an episode of his ongoing Facebook video series entitled Jeet Kune Do Dialogues. Dwight was a kind and generous host, and we had a great time nerding out and talking martial arts. You can find the video on Dwight's Facebook page, and I'm sure that before long it will be up on YouTube as well. Anyway, that's what I think. But I could be wrong. Let me know what you think, and check out old episodes of the Martial Brain podcast at my website, rpmartialarts.com. I'm Jeff Westfall for The Martial Brain. The Martial Brain is produced by Raging Squirrel Productions in association with the Rising Phoenix Martial Arts Academy. If you like the podcast and would like to help it grow, go to iTunes or Stitcher and give it an honest rating and review. Contact me with questions about the Martial Brain or about the Rising Phoenix Academy at my website, rpmartialarts.com.